This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Congress is sprinting to approve a second coronavirus aid package, this one worth $483 billion. The deal would replenish the fund that small businesses apply to for keeping payroll solvent. It would also pump more money into hospitals and testing programs. It's likely this will not be the last form of aid that Congress sends to the states. The Senate approved the package on Tuesday, and the House wants lawmakers to get back in town for a Thursday vote. With us now, on his trip back to Washington, is 9th District Congressman Andy Levin. Congressman, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks, April. It's great to talk to you again.
What do you think should be the priorities going forward? Do you feel like this bill is a proper step in the proper direction?
Well, this is really an interim package. We have really much more to do, but I certainly support this bill because, you know, it helps our hospitals, our hospital workers, it helps our small businesses, and, you know, it really forces the administration to get going on a national approach to testing. So while there's many more things we have to do, these are all good things, and so I'm very supportive of getting them done, and I appreciate our leadership for getting it done, because what the Senate first proposed was nothing like what we're passing tomorrow. So it's been much improved by Democrats in the Senate and the House working together.
We've seen some reports that there has not been a lot of agreement for a clear path on the next round of stimulus. Can you tell us a little bit about your priorities?
Absolutely. So, number one, I introduced a bill along with three of my colleagues from really across the country to pump money to smaller governments. The CARES Act included a significant amount of money for state stabilization funding, but it really just went to states and local governments of 500,000 or more. Well, in Michigan, that's the city of Detroit, Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, and Kent County. That's it. And all those governments, I want to help. But like in the 9th District, all 21 of my local jurisdictions obviously are smaller than that, as, you know, are 79 of our 83 counties and all the rest of our cities and townships. So our proposal is to provide $250 billion to governments that are smaller than 500,000 population. And we need to let them use the funds to make up for revenue they've lost, and not just to do what the CARES Act allowed, which is pay for things that have specifically not been budgeted before, but came up during this crisis. Well, your police, your EMT, your fire was already budgeted before, but you're hemorrhaging. You know, so we have to provide money there. We need to save our postal service and our postal workers.
Now that more people are getting packages than ever before. We've heard
April, we need to have everybody be able to vote by mail. Everybody. So we can't do that without the Postal Service. For a lot of reasons. Yeah.
Good luck getting the Senate on board with that. We've heard from a number of business owners who were not able to apply on the first round of Paycheck Protection Program, and they're concerned that they might miss out on the second round as well. It seems possible that some of these businesses just won't make it. Is this just going to be a first come, first serve game of survival as long as funds are available?
Well, it's still far from perfect, and I would, you know, like to take a different approach, but this is the essence of what we accomplished on the small business side. The House Democrats basically said, look, we are not just going to put more money in there so the lion's share of it can go to Ruth Chris Steakhouse and these other, you know, big chains that are getting millions and millions of dollars. And the local barbershop and independent restaurant and nail salon and so forth can't get anything. So we set aside $60 billion of this money for smaller lending institutions and smaller businesses to, you know, smaller credit unions, smaller banks. And they are specifically going to provide the money to small businesses. I still worry about the justice of it, April. If you're an unbanked business, it's great that we're giving some of the money to institutions that may give you a look, but this has been, I mean, look, the crisis is phenomenal, and I don't begrudge a medium-sized business for getting, you know, getting help. I want them to, but we really should be helping the smallest businesses first. This is a big step in that direction. It's still not perfect, and the money's going to run out, and, you know, in a matter of days or weeks, and we're still, you know, going to have a lot of work to do.
We didn't plan this, but we're having this conversation with you on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and you published a statement calling for better treatment of the natural world. At the same time, we just heard that there's the systematic weakening of regulation at the US EPA has had a negative impact on the Great Lakes. Do you think there's any way to get back what we've lost?
There certainly is a way to get back what we've lost. And in a way, this crisis gives us a little inkling of it, doesn't it? Because all of us have seen so much reporting about people seeing more animals, people in Kathmandu seeing the Himalayas for the first time, people from Los Angeles to Delhi having much less smog. This is something, if we realize that if we take a systematic approach to our environment, and not just, yes, we should all carry reusable water bottles and reusable bags, but Earth Day can't just be about our individual practices. If we get rid of this government on November 3rd and get a government that will actually put the economy at put the environment at the center of our economic life, we can tackle climate change and build an economy that's based on renewable energy, on great union jobs for people, you know, making the environment safe for generations to come. And there's no alternative. There's no planet B, April. Let's get about it. And absolutely, we can do it if we put our minds to it. And if we take collective action, not just individual action, to save our planet.
As people probably guessed, you are in the car right now, headed back to Washington, D.C. Congress.
Not the best connection, but I'm on the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
That's okay.
Back to D.C.
You know, this is not a particularly easy time for folks to be doing that commute, going to the nation's capital one day to handle votes and business, and then returning to districts to do the necessary work that constituents badly need right now. Have you been driving back and forth the whole time?
Well, this is only I did a 30-hour solo round trip when we passed the last bill, and now I'm doing it now. I mean, each of us handles it in our own way. You know, my dad's 88, and two of my kids have Crohn's disease and are immunocompromised. And so I personally feel like even though I don't discourage others from flying, I just need to take every precaution. So I'm in my UAW-made Ford Explorer COVID-free cocoon driving by myself to D.C. And that's the way I could do it to, you know, keep my family safe. I'm glad you raised our work at home, because I've never seen anything like this, April. Of course, our office is closed physically, but my staff is working so hard. Our phone line in D.C. and in Warren is picked up. Each of them is picked up every hour, all the messages. And my constituents, all of our constituents need help. They need that unemployment insurance check. They need to get that small business forgivable loan. They've got family members stuck in Peru or the Philippines trying to get home. So the work of a congressperson really is partly about making policy in Washington, but honestly, a lot of it is about just helping our constituents, the American people, you know, get what they need to survive through a crisis like this. And it's an honor to do it.
House leadership is working on a plan that would allow representatives to vote by proxy. Do you support remote voting right now?
You know, I do, April, and I hope that we get this proxy thing done today. If not, I mean, tomorrow when we vote. But I don't understand why we wouldn't. You know, this is a crisis. They can put ironclad language in there that says we're only doing this because of this huge crisis, and we won't do it in normal times. But really, the Congress needs to continue its oversight work of the administration. We need to keep making policy for the country. And so I think we have the technology in 2020 to function remotely in a secure way. And I totally support Jim McGovern, the chair of the Rules Committee, and Zoe Lofgren, the chair of the House Admin Committee, as they try to stand up new ways for us to operate so we can get the people's business done during this pandemic.
This issue's been really divided on party lines, though. What about the criticism that Speaker Pelosi pushed the issue of remote voting really hard during the earlier stimulus vote? I mean, should this be a top priority when hospitals in Michigan are laying off thousands of employees and a quarter of the state's workforce is unemployed?
I don't get the connection, April.
Well, was this the right time? I mean, was this the right time to draw the line in the sand on remote voting?
Well, if we want to help the hospitals and the people, we have to do our business. We have to take care of the people's business. And it doesn't really get the people's business done faster by waiting for remote voting. It's quite the opposite. The more convenient we make it for people to vote on bills and do committee work, the more aggressively we can respond to this crisis. That's the way I view it anyway.
Congressman Levin, thank you so much for taking the call, even though you're multitasking your way to D.C. right now. We appreciate it.
You're so welcome, April. Thanks for your great reporting. We need real facts from the media so much today, and I appreciate your great work.
Stay safe.
Thanks.